This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hi, this is John. I got a real quick announcement about a cool giveaway. As you may remember, recently Redgate Software was kind enough to be our sponsor, and they were announcing Ant's Memory Profiler 5. We, of course, tried out the product to make sure we felt comfortable endorsing it, and I was really, really impressed with it. And so after the promotion ended, I went back to them and I said, hey, can we get a few promo copies to give away to our listeners? And they said yes, which is totally awesome because this product normally sells for $495. So they've given us two full copies to give away. So we're going to start this week by giving one away to the first person who correctly answers this trivia question. Name all the repeat guests on Herding Code, up to and including this show. And you can just leave your answer in a comment on the show notes. And the first correct answer wins this huge, awesome mega prize, $495 worth. And of course, keep listening for the second giveaway. So this week, we're talking to Miguel de Acasa and Jeff Norton about the MonoTouch product. So here we go. So we've already talked to you at least once, maybe more than once, Miguel. And I think our listeners know about who you are and your nefarious plans. Jeff, we haven't spoken to you before. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Jeff Norton, and I work on the Mono team with Miguel. I've done a number of things over the years, but I'm primarily responsible for our Mac support, and I've also worked on the Moonlight team. And lately, I've been the engineering lead on the MonoTouch project.
So I know that we'll dig in deeper, but can you give us the elevator speech, as it were, for what MonoTouch is and why people would use that over the existing iPhone development tools?
Sure. So MonoTouch is a commercial product from Novell. And what we've done is we've ported the Mono runtime to run on the iPhone and allow you to write full native iPhone applications in your favorite languages that target the CLR, primarily being C#, obviously. One of the biggest reasons that we think people would like to use it is we tend to think on our team that C# is a little bit of a more fluent and expressive language than Objective-C, but some people who like Objective-C are more than willing and free to continue using Xcode. But more than that, there's a number of companies who do things in .NET today that want to have the ability to reuse components or code when they're moving their application to other platforms, and we've provided that ability.
Well, I guess there's a couple of things that we've noticed that people have done. For example, these are just some of the things that people have been experimenting with MonoTouch. But for example, on Objective-C, there's kind of a strong pattern when you respond to an object, it's not like, let me take a step back some of us are more used to the pattern where, when you have a widget on the screen or some kind of control, you can listen to events or you can hook up and configure that control on the screen. So for example, if you tap on a button, you would get an event and you would attach, a method to that. And these days, attaching the method can be in the form of, a lambda expression or a delegate. Objective-C kind of takes a different approach that I think that it made sense when it came out. And the idea was objects, instead of having, a bunch of, methods that you could register your interest in, they would basically, signal an instance of another class with what is actually happening. So, for example, anything that would happen with a button would actually be, it would send a message to another class and, that class would receive the messages. So you kind of hook it up that way. And, Objective-C programmers seem happy with that, but I think that, a lot of other developers just want to have, want to kind of use a programming model that they're more familiar with. So I think that a lot of people are quite, are quite happy with the way that we expose the Cocoa APIs to be more similar to the way C# does things, where you have events and properties and, delegates for doing all of that stuff. So that's one of the things. There's a couple of other nice, good things. You have access to the .NET APIs in addition to all of the iPhone APIs. So you kind of have all of the iPhone APIs for doing, OpenGL or, video or using the camera or, building your animations. And in addition to that, you have the entire .NET stack. So that means that, for example, you have built-in asynchronous patterns for anything that you might want to make asynchronous, right? You can use system XML for processing your documents or generating the documents, or system XML link, or you can use web services with it. So, you know, there's a lot of added features from using the .NET framework in addition to the, you know, to the native iPhone APIs.
Well, are there some disconnects? Like you can't access the file system or like system.io namespaces, things like that on the iPhone?
No, so what we've done is Monotouch isn't the full .NET 2.0 BCL. We actually started with the Silverlight BCL, and we've added some things back on top of that as we go ahead. So we've got things like Miguel said, System Web Services. Our next release will have experimental support for WCF. Things like system.io and files are all perfectly good. Some of the things we're missing and coming in a future release are stuff like system.data or the pieces of System Web Services to let you host a web service we don't include.
So that actually brought something to mind when you're talking about basing things on the Silverlight.net stack. I was wondering how crazy it would be to try and run like more of the Silverlight stack on the iPhone. Like, are there more parts to it, I don't know, layout engine or other things that could also move over as well? I know we've been, or some people have been hoping to see Silverlight on the iPhone, and due to Apple's not really wanting, it seems like Apple kind of had prevented that.
Yeah, let me address quickly the first part. What is nice about the Silverlight profile that Microsoft did is that it dropped a lot of dependencies from the full .NET framework. So when we're talking about, you know, building mobile applications that you want to keep small, we chose the Silverlight profile because it has fewer cross dependencies across assembly. So for example, there is no system.configuration or any of the rest of the mess that comes with system configuration. So we picked the Silverlight profile because it was leaner than the .NET 2.0 profile. And it also meant that our linker actually can strip out a lot more code. So if you write a very simple application, instead of bringing and pre-compiling all of the code that you might need because of the number of dependencies in .NET 3.5, we take, you know, Silverlight is very easy to link. It links a lot better. You know, the code dependencies are much smaller. So that's why we picked the Silverlight profile. Now, as for the GUI components of what would it take today to bring Silverlight to the iPhone, I'll let Jeff answer that question.
So bringing Silverlight to the iPhone is something that we've discussed, and basically would obviously start with the Moonlight project. And Chris Toshok, the engineering lead on Moonlight, has actually been working for the last little while on changing the Moonlight. Right now is a very Linux and GTK plus specific backend, and he's been slowly refactoring all that code out to be platform agnostic. So we have a platform agnostic layer which can go handle things like input events and key bindings and all that kind of stuff, which are platform specific. Another engineer on the Moonlight team, Jeff Steadfast, has been slowly in his own time working on a Windows port, which has sort of been fleshing it and proving the concept. So what we would have to do to get Moonlight on the iPhone, there's a couple things. We would have to, first of all, write the platform backend for the iPhone, which would involve things like drawing into a UI view instead of drawing into a GTK window like we do today. Then we'd also have to look at the new Silverlight 3 APIs with regards to multi-touch and orientation and try to figure out how to work some of those into the iPhone, of like how would we get, you know, the keyboard to interact with Silverlight and things like that. But it's definitely a project that we're interested in. We don't think we've committed to timelines yet, but it's something that we want to go forward with. And because we do use Cairo and Pixman for our rendering layer in Moonlight, and they already work on the iPhone today, basically a lot of the heavy lifting is done for us.
Yeah, so I think that the short story is, yes, we want to do it, but you're not going to get your standard Silverlight implementation. Well, it's not going to run inside the browser. So the best that you can hope for is to bring your Silverlight applications as standalone apps that would have to go through the App Store. So if somebody wanted to use your Silverlight app, they would need to publish the app, you know, compile it, put it through the App Store, get it approved by Apple, and then people would download that. It wouldn't work by you having go to a web page and then, you know, magically would work. That setup is not going to be supported. And that's entirely an Apple decision. So, you know, I think it works in the long term.
Okay. So shifting gears more towards the product side of it, we were asking around on Twitter and telling people we were going to be talking to you folks. And some people were asking about the cost, and obviously it is a product, but then there's on top of, you know, whatever expenses you have for other iPhone development, then you need to pay for another product. Can you talk about the cost aspect?
Yeah, it's incredibly cheap in my the way we see it is, you know, when we decided to work on this project, you know, the issue for us is when we build Monarch, we build Moonlight. You know, we have our own interest in mind, and that is to a large extent improve the Linux ecosystem, right? So make sure that Linux improves. And, you know, we're part of a Linux company, and that's why we do a lot of that stuff. The iPhone, on the other hand, is a platform that we like because, you know, we use iPhones ourselves. And, you know, a lot of people have asked us about C# for .NET, you know, .NET for the iPhone. It was probably the most requested feature that we got on our feedback form on the web. You know, it was probably 2-3 times a day for the last year, and it was getting a little bit tiresome to say, go build it yourself and you know, leave us alone. So, but basically for us to justify going into building, you know, doing the full SDK, not only, you know, somebody asked me about a year ago, how do you get the Mon on the iPhone? And I posted some instruction, and the reality is that it's very complicated to get Mon on the iPhone running. It is possible, and the instructions are public. But it's, you know, it requires a lot of work to make a fully functional product. So what we did is, we didn't think that we could, you know, get away with just giving people a mono binary. So, for us to actually justify the investment on a platform that really, you know, brings no benefit to Novell, we had to make it a for-pay product. So what we did is, you know, not only we brought .NET to the iPhone, we actually bound the iPhone API. So, you know, that took a lot of work. We kind of have learned our lesson that we can't really give people an SDK. We can't just give them the framework and tell them, now go build applications yourself. So we had to expand MonoDevelop. We had to port MonoDevelop to the Mac. We had to add the add-ins, the templates, the deployment to the device, you know, try to streamline the whole process. And so, you know, that took a lot of, and that took a lot of effort. And basically when it came back to, you know, when it came to, is this worth doing? You know, we had to pick a price that that Novell would feel comfortable investing the resources to make this happen versus not making it happen. So that's why the price is what it is.
Worth noting that we do have a 100% free, non-time limited evaluation, that the only restriction is it won't go on device. So you can download the evaluation version of MonoTouch today and work in the simulator, which is exactly the same model that Apple used with their SDK.
Okay. So you talked about how you've, part of the work was in making it more streamlined and simpler to get set up to build an application using MonoTouch. So can you overview what, you know, like I've got my Mac, I got my iPhone, I want to write an app. What are the overview of steps of things I'm going to do?
Okay. So the first step you would need to do is if you want to get it actually onto the device and not just the simulator, the first step you need to do regardless is you need to get the iPhone SDK from Apple. The native compiler and code signing tools are all that we use are all actually Apple's at the end of the day, with not including our cross compiler, obviously. So you get the iPhone SDK from developer.apple.com/iPhone. If you want to get your application onto the actual device, you also need to pay Apple, I think it's $99 a year now, to become a registered iPhone developer. And then there's a number of things you have to do there, like getting certificates and provisioning profiles, install them all on your device. But once you've sort of done that dance, the MonoTouch process is you load up MonoDevelop, you create a new iPhone project from one of our templates, and basically start typing C# code. We provide, you know, full code completion into the libraries that we've bound. What we do leverage, though, because we didn't want to go and recreate a GUI designer for this, so we actually use Apple's Interface Builder to go and lay out and model your GUI, which is familiar for people in Xcode. For people who are not, there's a bit of a learning curve there, but it's a pretty powerful tool in and of itself. And then it's a very similar experience to people that are used to using Visual Studio, where it's basically, you know, build and run. MonoDevelop is similar enough to Visual Studio that most people don't find it too hard of a leap to get across.
You know, the other thing that is interesting is there's been a flurry of tutorials and screencasts in the community that actually address this. There's an entire tutorial. I think it's from Brent. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's from
Brent.
Funnily
enough, he's a WPF programmer by day. You know, it's an entire tutorial from a pristine machine to installing all of the dependencies to get your first application running in the simulator. You know, it's pretty comprehensive, and there's a number of tutorials now being screencast for various things. Kind of the community is taking up It's, you know, I don't even keep track of these anymore. There's a website now dedicated to this called monotouch.info that kind of tracks all of the postings and experiments and things that people are doing with Mon on the iPhone.
So I was looking at the Hello World tutorial and kind of wondering how you reconcile using Interface Builder and then MonoTouch. Because when you're using like Interface Builder and Xcode, it's very easy to define all your outlets in your dot, .m, yeah, I think it's .m, for your header. And then you can read them in Interface Builder and they come up. And so and that's not really supported in C# classes or anything. If you create your own like ID outlet C#
so
class,
There's two different ways that Interface Builder integrates with Xcode. The first is you can just go fire up Interface Builder and lay out an interface and actually create classes and outlets in Interface Builder. And then in Interface Builder, if you go to the file menu, there's a file, write header files or whatever it is. And that goes and generates your Objective-C code for you. What we've done is when you do that step in Interface Builder, we actually go and generate partial classes as code binds, which will automatically have all of your outlets already connected into the MonoTouch engine, so that you don't need to go about manually connecting the two sides together. The other side of Interface Builder is what you're discussing, where you can actually create an outlet in the code first and have Interface Builder pick it up. Because Interface Builder is so tightly integrated with Xcode, we don't support that direction of the integration yet, but the experience of going in and creating and laying out your entire UI and adding your outlets to everything, as soon as you save the file and go back to Mono develop, it detects that the file has changed and it will go regenerate all the code behind files for each of your exits.
Yeah, I think that in that area, we actually excelled because there's no, you know, with Xcode, you have two options. When you make a change like that and you say write classes, you know, a dialog pops up and says, you want me to override the files or you want to do a merge? So, you know, up comes a dialog where you have to merge your changes with the changes that Interface Builder wants to make. And, you know, it's basically a diff tool where you have to merge those changes back and forth. So that's one option. Or the other option is you go and you man up and go and write all of your code and, you know, go and declare properties left and right for the outlets. So what we did in this case, I think it's a lot better. We, you know, we parse the XML data that Interface Builder generates and we automatically mirror that. So you go define your outlets and you just access them as properties immediately. So, you know, define your GUI, draw your GUI, expose the things that you want in Interface Builder, switch to MonoDevelop and start using those properties, just like you would with the, you know, with ASP.NET. Like when you switch from the GUI designer to the code tab, you know, you have access to those properties immediately and, you know, Visual Studio takes care of the glue in between. So we do the same thing for Interface Builder. You don't actually have to worry about that.
Yeah. So that's the looking at the, I don't know how to pronounce it, XIB zib file, I guess. Is that
zip files, yeah.
And so I thought it was interesting from the point of view of a mostly Silverlight WPF ASP.NET side. Like I'm wanting to look at the markup. So I was reading about zip files and that it's an XML based format, and I thought, great, you know, let me go look at some. And it was interesting that I'm sure it'd be easy enough to find them, but in say 15 minutes of Google and Binging like mad, I couldn't find a single, you know, sample zip file out there, which I guess the idea is similar to nibs, like it's XML based, but you're not going to be actually looking at it, right? It's just, it happens to be XML.
So zip is actually a really odd serialization format. It's a very odd mapping from Apple's internal format to XML. It's almost you know, I don't think you should call it XML really. I mean, it's certainly, it's like a, you know, like compiler generated output almost. So, you know, if you really want to parse those files, Michael Hutchinson from our team did a fantastic job of mapping those XMLs and loading them into kind of a C# DOM. And, you know, I would use that myself. But it's not really, you know, it's a kind of XML that was built in the, you know, remember XML RPC?
Right.
You know, that one where you say you didn't really, you know, or XML, you know, the SOAP, but not the document style, not the little document style, but the RPC style where, you know, every parameter had a type and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of the XML of that era where people didn't really understand XML. So it certainly is a valid XML document. It's just not something very useful, you know, and it has all kinds of reference back and forth between the objects. So, you know, but if you want to look at a couple of zip files, we have those checked in into our samples repository so you can go and browse those bad boys.
Yeah, so what I think happened, Miguel, and I think you just nailed it on the head. So Apple used to use what are called nibs, and zibs actually get compiled into nibs. And I think the main reason that they made the change is that people were checking nibs into their revision control systems, which were binary blobs, which means every time you touched it, you had to upload a whole new binary to your RCS, which doesn't play well with things like CVS and SVN. So I have no validation to back this up, but my main opinion that I think why they made the change to XIBs is to play better with RCSs. So I think it's just a serialization of their internal tree format that they use in Interface Builder down to the XML, because you use a tool called IB tool. And what IB tool does is load the XIB back up into Interface Builder on the command line and compile it down to a nib, which is what's actually used to power the interface on the device or the simulator.
Yeah, they don't even really call it serialization. They say like freeze dried, I think, which I always thought was funny.
Yeah.
So we got a couple of good questions here from a guy whose Twitter handle is Huge Onion. So you gotta love that. So the first one, and they're kind of related here. So is there anything that you can't do using Monotouch and .NET good with Objective-C? And then the related question is, can you mix Objective-C and .NET when you're writing a Monotouch project?
Okay, so the first one being, is there anything you cannot do? So we have not bound 100% of all the APIs available on the iPhone yet. We're missing some things like core data and a couple other little things. But every release that goes out, we're adding more bindings as we catch up. But we've got all the main stuff done. Now, that isn't to say that you couldn't still use those classes. Just because we haven't provided the .NETized version of the bindings, you can still, by all means, use them. It just takes a little bit more legwork. To answer the follow-up question, yes, you can intermix Objective-C and Monotype C#. There's a couple great tutorials about it. One that a guy wrote about how to use the AdMob libraries from, I guess there's some company that does ads for free apps, so you can make some money off of them. But there's a guy, I can get you guys the link for the show notes, but there's a guy there who wrote a great tutorial about how you do it. Basically, the main restriction to keep in mind, though, is anytime you want to do anything on the iPhone, your resultant binary has to be a static binary. You cannot dynamically link in anything. So any Objective-C code that you wanted to include into Monotouch and bind and talk back and forth with, you would need to compile into a static library first and then include it in your Monotouch project.
Yeah, but I think that Jeff went. I think that Jeff is a little bit like a liberal-minded person, because he's always explaining. And I think that the short answer is better. The short answer is there's really nothing that you can do with Monotouch that you can do with Objective C.
But there's lots you can do with Monotouch that you can't do with Objective C.
Such as
Link, System Web Services, WCF.
Well, in the end, I guess you can argue in the end that it's a Turing machine, so you can do anything on anything,
true.
Right? So I just think that it's easier.
Right. You can do anything on anything, provided you have the amount of time. So something like Link or WCF or whatever, if it speeds up your development, makes something possible that wouldn't otherwise be possible.
Yeah, you know what? This is interesting because, a few years ago, I kind of digged soap, and then the REST revolution came, and REST. So, Monotouch has an HTTP stack, and when the question was, how do I get and extract data? It's like, just do a REST call, my man, and, REST it, and then parse the output. So that's why we didn't really put a lot of effort in the, in the 1.0 release, which is fixed today, on doing web services, because, we thought that the world had moved to REST and, do your HTTP gets and parse the result like a man. But, as it turns out, the idea of parsing results it just seems like busy work. So a lot of people work, I was surprised by how many people wanted us to support the XML deserializer and supporting the web services. I thought, I keep reading Reddit and I keep reading Twitter that the world had moved to REST, but apparently there's a lot of us that are still kind of lazy and want to, just get our hands on our WSDL and move on with our lives.
So we had a question from Scott Allen, who couldn't make the call, but he said he was just kind of intrigued by the idea of outlets and how those work and if they're significantly different from how you would be wiring up events and things inside a normal .NET app. Did we already cover that in enough detail, do you think? Or?
Yeah, we sort of did. The only thing I think we didn't really touch on is all of the .NETization, for lack of a better phrase, that we've done to Apple's controls and events is completely opt-in. So if anybody wanted to still use the old Objective-C pattern, where you go and you create a new class and you define all of the selectors on it, and then you tell the button that this is my delegate, and that's the Objective-C phrase for this cross-class messaging, you can still do all of that in C# and Monotouch as well. So we allow people to pick their flavor, for lack of a better phrase.
Okay.
So we got another question here. Who's this? This is from S. Hamill. His Twitter name is I thought it was Shame9, but I think it's S. Hamill X. I guess I misread that. Too many Roman numerals. So his question is, what are the plans to improve the Monotouch debugging story? And I'm kind of replying to him and saying that, if you're writing a C# class, you can actually use NUnit and write unit tests and spend less time debugging, maybe.
You know, there are plans for a debugger, and it might happen faster than people think, but we're not ready to give out dates yet. But, right now it's a little bit like you said. Do enough tests, use your write lines, and so on. But we will have a debugger for Monotouch. It's just, we could either have delayed this for a couple of more months and get this story straight, or ship this stuff. And what was interesting is actually that, a couple of people said, we really need you guys to push this through because we need to, we have actually finished the product and we're ready to launch it. A couple of consultants got in early into the beta, and, in 6 weeks, they already have a product ready to launch, and they have, and other people's already doing enterprise deployment. So it was basically a balanced thing. We can wait for Monotouch to be perfect, and that would have basically meant wait for a year for us to have everything in place, and or we could ship right now. So, we'll have a debugger, and we'll have more of the .NET APIs, and we'll have more features that people want, profilers and things like that. But it's, we're going to kind of a very open sourcey thing. We're going to be dripping new features as we develop them. Like, for example, right now we have a really nice code generator that lets you bind any Objective-C class. We haven't released it because it's nowhere near production, but that's the intention. The intention is that we're as soon as we productize and polish that stuff, it's coming out for people to use. So there's stuff like that.
And on the debugging story, one of the nice things we've done in version 1.1 is we've upgraded our full AOT compiler to emit full dwarf debugging symbols into the resultant binary. And what this means is, if you're running on the device and debugging and you do get a crash, when you do a backtrace, you're going to see not just unknown symbols the whole way, you're going to see full symbols of what exactly managed class you're into, which, while not being ideal and where we want to end up, as Miguel was saying, for now, we'll at least let you know you're in this method when you're having a problem, so you can start honing down your debugging from there. And what Dwarf is, for anybody who's not sure, is it's a standard debugging format which Apple uses and GCC uses and GDB uses.
Can you tell us about the graphics stack and how graphics programming works on the iPhone?
Yeah, so we bound all of the native Cocoa Touch controls. So the actual graphics stack and rendering and everything of the controls that's done is leveraging all of Apple's native libraries on the device. We've also gone and bound things like Core Graphics and Core Animation. So if you want to do custom drawn controls and graphics, you can use all of Apple's native libraries for that as well. And as Miguel mentioned a little earlier in the call, we've also bound using OpenTK, which is a great little open source binding around GL, we bound their whole GL 1.1 for the older generation of devices and GL 2.0 for the newer generation devices. And there's some samples in the wikis and things about all that as well. But there's also some really neat, innovative games that are coming soon using some of that stuff too.
Now, I wanted to test drive things earlier, and I stupidly pulled out a PowerPC based Mac and went about getting things set up and quickly realized that wasn't going to work. And I realize that that's not really, I understand why you wouldn't support that and why nobody wants to support PowerPC at this point. But then I was wondering, well, since MonoDevelop runs on, on Linux or PC, is it possible to simulate and, do development on and, kick the tires on PC or Linux and then later, say, yes, I've got a cool app. I want to, go use my friend's Mac or whatever, or, buy one now. I'm ready to go ahead with a product. I understand that's not supported today. Is that potentially something that could happen eventually?
It's actually something you can do today. If you get the eval version and unpacked it, you could take the DLLs over to Linux or over to Windows and get code completion and everything else. But unfortunately, the reason it doesn't work on PowerPC for you is that Apple doesn't actually support the iPhone SDK on the PowerPC, which means we don't have access to do any of the compilation with their header files or their compilers or anything else. So, and that would be the same problem you would have on Linux or Windows today, is you could, by all means, go ahead and write all your code and code complete and do compile tests, but you wouldn't actually be able to run anything because we don't have the resultant bits you need for the iPhone simulator or for the SDK, the underlying Apple SDK.
I guess that was more of my question, is if there would be some possible way to simulate the, you know, to run Monotouch and simulate the, you know, I guess that's kind of asking a lot for anyone to try and write an iPhone simulator off of Mac, but I want it, so.
Yeah, you really want to get the Mac, and you know, I'm a Linux guy, so it feels odd to be recommending the Mac to people, but you do need it for the emulator. Without that, you really you really can't test anything. I mean, you might as well just develop on paper and you know, do your beta testing on paper, and and when you're ready with your paper design and your coding, you can transcribe it to run on the iPhone.
Is this like punch cards, Miguel?
Yeah, roughly. You know, my father used to, he's a scientist, so he didn't really like to be in front of a computer. So he would, when he needed to solve a problem, he would write it down on paper. He would write the program in paper, hand it out to me, and it would run on the first attempt with no bugs.
They call it desk checking. The old guys used to. They would go and write out their computer programs and then just sit there and compile it in their brain, sitting at their desk.
Well, you know, if you've seen a mathematician work, you know, they basically go and, you know, they write their formulas, that, you know, they make all the steps and they make sure that they're right. So I guess there's a little bit of that mentality when you're writing software, it's kind of more of a proof thing that goes from A to Z and you're sure that it works. So I was always amazed that my father could write code like that I would just type in the computer and it would work on the first attempt. Debugging was never really part of the experience with my father. So anyways, if you are like my father, you can just do that. Then you don't need a Mac.
Yeah, okay. I'm happy with the solution. Okay, so from the point of view of how you actually built this, I mean, I think people, you know, we understand kind of the higher level. You're using the Apple Interface Builder, you know, system. You're using the compiler that you've already had. You've had Mono developed. So the real guts of this are binding to the iPhone APIs and then doing the static compilation to run on iPhone. Is that kind of the guts of what was involved in building the Monotouch product?
Yeah, and I think that you can think of it as you know how WinForms was a binding around with the Win32 API, a .netified API for Win32.
Mm-hmm.
So we got that layer. So we got the equivalent. It's called UIKit, monotouch.uikit. And then just like you had system drawing, and system drawing was the binding around libgdi plus, we got Core Graphics, which is, you know, which talks to Quartz and talks to, what is the other thing called? I don't know, but I think it's Core Graphics. Core Graphics, yeah. And Quartz.
Core Graphics, our framework.
So we have pretty much the same mapping. We're just calling those things. So if it helps to, you know, people figure out what we're talking about, it's really like a WinForms and a system drawings binding to the native stuff. So there's a, you know, we didn't really do any UI work other than bindings in that area.
And then I've seen, like, for instance, at PDC and other times you've shown static compilation, and then you showed how that was running on iPhone. Was there a lot of more work required in order to, you know, productize that and you know, make it work beyond console app?
Yeah. So the stuff we showed at PDC was using a great product of the company that uses Mono, which is called Unity 3D. And these guys make an IDE for games, and they were the first people to actually use Mono on the iPhone, and they also do things like Mono on the Wii. But the static compilation unit that we use for Monotouch is actually a newer generation of that, which supports generics. The stuff for Unity 3D is an older version of that, and they haven't quite updated yet. So one of the things we did for Monotouch is we decided going forward with this product that we needed to have generics. So we updated the whole full AOT engine to support generics through the stack. And then the other piece that's kind of interesting is one of the reasons I came onto this project was I started Coco Sharp and the Objective-C Sharp libraries a couple of years ago, which gave me sort of intimate knowledge on how to bind the CLR to Objective-C. And one of the problems that we had to surmount, and this is one of the pieces that is proprietary into every app, is all of the existing bindings to Objective-C, and there's a great one out there today for anybody who wants to do this on the desktop, which is called MonObj-C, M-O-N-O-B-J-C. But they all use dynamic code emitting. So basically at runtime, they use system reflection emit or dynamic methods to go create the ability to glue Objective-C registrations into .NET registrations. And that's one of the big hurdles we had to sort of overcome, because we can't do that on the iPhone. We have to statically be able to determine from a dynamic language how to get to the proper static strong type method in C#. So those were the two main, with regards to sort of under the hood tooling that needed to be done, those were the two main pieces. Also, though, being the things Miguel mentioned earlier about the rest of the tooling all the way through the tool chain, we didn't just want to do those two pieces and say, well, here you go, you're on your own. We had to go and provide the tooling all the way from, you know, integrating to the iPhone simulator, to uploading things to the device, and integrating with Mono Develop and the add-in and everything else.
So now that you've conquered the iPhone with Mono, are there plans to turn the eye of Novell onto the Android, or maybe the pre-platform?
The eye of Novell, you make it sound so nefarious.
So I used to have to maintain those old NetWare servers that came on the big floppy. And if you ever, God forbid, shut it down, you just had to pray that the floppy would spin.
Oh, well, we're not part of that Novell. But, you know, I guess it will depend on demand. The kind of the thing with the Android is that the Android already comes with Java, which is very similar to C# in its nature. So it's a managed language, so it offers many of the benefits that Mono offers, like garbage collections and, you know, a thread save API and stuff like that. So Mono on the Android is probably not as important for people as Mono was for the iPhone, because, you know, with Mono on the iPhone, you get GC, you get managed language, you get, you know, type safety and so on. And you already get that with the Android. So a couple of people have asked about this, but we just don't see the demand right now for that. I guess the real only difference is the speed, because, you know, the Android is still running an interpreted Java. Run a vehicle called Dalvik, and we're actually just a native compiler, so, you know, we're a lot faster. So I guess a case could be made in that particular thing, but right now I think our focus is going to be in making sure that MonoTouch has instead of spreading ourselves too thin, we're going to make sure that Mono on the iPhone is as good as it can humanly be made good. You know, for example, since we released, we already reduced in another 30% the disk space for applications, right? So we improved the linker. We improved the code generator to generate less code for, you know, I think what we call trampolines. We, you know, Jeff on the call reduced the startup time in half. So, you know, instead of an application, you know, burning 2 seconds, now it only burns 1 second on the slow iPhone. So, you know, we want to make sure that Mono on the iPhone is an amazing product. We don't want it to be just, a one-off. So, as soon as we conquer that space and we're comfortable with Mono on the iPhone being the best that it can be, then we'll probably consider other platforms. But right now, I have to say, just demand-wise and the needs of this stuff on other platforms are fairly minimal.
So you talked about, like, slimming down the application size. How big is a standard, you know, like a Hello World app where I drop a button on and click it and it says the tap count and I pop that on my iPhone? How big does that application end up being?
So with 1.0, it was 5 megabytes, and I guess with this release, it's probably going to be around 4.
And it's worth mentioning that that's uncompressed size. Because the big goal that everybody has for the iPhone is Apple set an arbitrary limit of 10 megabytes. If your application is larger than 10 megabytes, then you can't purchase it, or it cannot be purchased over 3G. But the 10 megabyte limit is for compressed. So we ARM code is actually quite compressible, and some of that that size is the... One of the things we do, which is really neat, is after we full AOT an assembly, we strip everything out of it, all of the IL out of it, except for the metadata, because we don't need it anymore because it's already been compiled. And metadata compresses very, very well. So I think the 4 megs compresses down to about 1.3, if I remember correctly, Miguel, 1.4, somewhere around there.
Okay. And then the other thing you were talking about was platform support. So we've talked about iPhone, we've talked about Android and Palm Pre, and the one other one that a couple of people own is the Windows mobile phone, which we've been kind of wondering what's going on with that. But ironically enough, it does run .NET Compact Framework, and I just wonder if there's a Mono story for, you know, if there's anything going on with Mono and Windows mobile phones, or if there's any reason for that.
Well, I guess the first question is, does anybody actually want to run a Windows mobile phone? I think that's... And, oh, that was low, wasn't it? It was low.
Just Steve Ballmer and that guy in the front row at their company meeting.
Oh, that was bad. I feel bad. I bet you.
From what I hear, Miguel, the new Windows Mobile is the best Windows Mobile ever. I believe you told me that.
You know, they do say that. I will say, and I'm not getting paid to say this, but I got fed up. I've got a 2-year-old Windows Mobile phone, and I installed a Windows Mobile 6.5 ROM on it. And it actually is pretty snappy now, and the battery lasts forever. I've been pretty, and now it's way behind what I would expect to buy in a new phone, but for a 2-year-old phone, I'm actually kind of impressed with it. I'm not happy with Windows Mobile's state right now, but I do see that they're not getting worse.
You know you want to move to the iPhone, and I'll give you the free license to MonoTouch. You know you want to move to the iPhone.
All right.
So just.
I have this recorded now.
Yeah, you have
it recorded. Now you need a $2,500 Mac, John.
Right. See.
But you know what? Actually, seriously, guys, this is, although I'm a Linux guy, I think that if we get more .NET developers on the Mac, they will start understanding the value of cross-platform and stop making their software, too Windows-specific. So, you know, I think that you should embrace the Mac, John. And you too, Scott. You guys need to embrace the Mac and love the Mac and embrace cross-platformness. And okay, what better way of looking good at the Starbucks cafe than having a Mac? I mean, seriously.
I've got a 6-year-old G4 iBook at home that I love very much.
Yeah, so it's time to get a PowerBook. And I can't believe I'm running ads for Apple now. But but with Richard Stallman calling me a traitor, you know, what else can I do?
Right, might as
well. I'd like to get more Windows devs on the Mac so they can see what applications could look like.
Yeah.
More Windows. Absolutely. Yes, I agree. John, just get yourself a Mac. You know you want it. You know you've been desiring it for more than years. And we finally have an IDE that you can use. And you can do ASP.NET MVC on the Mac. And I'm not being selfish. Well, I am, because I know you're going to have to help us fix bugs in MonoDevelop. But you know you want the Mac, you know you want it, and it's time to stop fighting.
Okay, so the answer to is anything going on with Mono for Windows Mobile is kind of a...
It's buy a Mac.
It's buy a Mac.
Okay, I can't believe I'm saying this. But doesn't Windows Mobile come with .NET? I don't think we should add a value to this.
Well, the value that we've added, Miguel, is there's a couple people that are doing some really neat things. There's a company up here where I am that actually made a port because Windows Mobile .NET CF doesn't support System Reflection Emit. So there's a company up here that actually created System Reflection Emit for .NET CF based on Cecil. So the main stuff we're seeing for Windows Mobile is people are taking the open source bits of Mono, where .NET CF doesn't have them implemented. They'll just pick up our class library source code, compile it down for .NET CF, and go ahead. But that's been going on for quite some time now.
Hmm. Okay. So I guess we're running down towards the end of the time. I was wondering, before we dig into, I was hoping for a huge unabashed pitch for Mono Space. But before that, I was wondering if there's anything else that we missed talking about with Mono Touch that you guys want to dig into or
There's this guy in Brazil. I was thinking about this when you guys were talking about Windows Mobile, but there's this guy in Brazil that ported the, apparently there was a an XNA for Silverlight project that let you run some XNA games inside Silverlight.
It's so actually older than that, Miguel. It's all based off Mono XNA.
Well, so I didn't really pay attention. But anyway, so this guy actually ported his stuff to MonoTouch, so you can actually run XNA games now on the iPhone. And what is a little bit sad is that, you can build games with the XNA API, but apparently you can't deploy those on the Zoom, but you can on the iPhone. So it's very bizarre. It's very bizarre. The iPhone has become a better XNA deployment platform than the Zoom is. So I guess that's inflammatory enough.
Yeah, I don't have any hard feelings about that at all. I went right out and downloaded the XNA Game Developer Studio and got all excited about it last year, and they had their update, and it was like you could actually deploy an XNA game to your Zoom if you installed XNA Game Developer Studio, which means you can't distribute it. And I figured, well, this year surely they will include that, and as of now, no. You still, there's still no way to deploy
it today. You know you want that Mac, John!
One of our beta testers, Christian Beaumont from Foundation 42, is writing a game for the iPhone on Monotouch. And he actually, not using XNA Touch for Monotouch, he's writing it natively. But he ported his full game from Monotouch to XNA in 16 hours, I think it was.
Wow.
And showed me the result. And it's an amazing port. But he was telling me that, I guess, even and this is with the new Zune HD, that Microsoft still doesn't have any sort of deployment story for how you actually get apps to people. And that when you're done running the app, you have to reboot the device to get back to the menu.
Hmm. I don't see a problem with that, really.
Oh, I'm done Twitter. Let me reboot.
Right. Well, you know, the one thing you're saying...
I think they should add a step where you have to remove the battery as well.
The thing you were saying about it being a simple port, I can kind of see that from what I looked at from XNA. There are pretty much no primitives. There's like sprites, and that's about it. And I was like, well, I'll just drop a rectangle. Okay, there's no buttons or stuff like that. Sure, I understand that. So I'll just drop a rectangle and hook up an event. Oh, there's no rectangles. You know, and pretty soon it's like basically you program by moving sprites around, and sprites are just bitmaps. And it was
and his whole game was OpenGL anyway, so it wasn't like he was using very many native controls. He just got, you know, basically just redoing his view layer needed to be done. But it's still pretty impressive to say porting his entire stack from one platform to the other, but keeping all of his C# the same in about 16 hours.
That is very impressive. Yeah.
You know, rather than historically, if you wanted to write something for XNA, you would have to go and start basically again to write it all in Objective-C.
Right. And then theoretically, that's in XNA. That could run on... Xbox, but then potentially could be also deployed to like a Wii or PlayStation, right? With
Yes. Well, I mean, somebody would need to bind the API, but yeah, Mono runs on the Wii and on the PS3, and I'm kind of savoring the idea of porting Moonlight to those devices, since we have a, you know, a Wii development kit and a PS3 development kit here in the office. So, you know, it's very tempting, very tempting.
All right, so I think now's part of the show where you guys should just tell everyone that they should go to Monospace.
All right, so we do have a conference, but I don't remember the dates. I was not prepared for this.
I've got the dates here. Hold on a sec. So Monospace is coming up. It's the end of October, from the 27th to the 30th, if I'm not mistaken. I will be there. I'm coming in on the 26th, that I will be doing a session on the 27th at Monospace on Monotouch, an in-depth walkthrough. And for anybody who's in the Austin area, I will also be speaking to the iPhone Coco users group that evening from 7 to 9 p.m. And then I'm hopping on a plane to go keynote the Prio conference in Munich on Thursday, October 29th, for anybody who's on that side of the pond. And we'll be talking about Monotouch there as well, and can come by and ask me any questions.
Yeah, but the Mono conference in Austin, you know, there's a bunch of interesting presentations. Well, you know, we'll talk about ASP.NET on Linux. We'll talk about migrating your apps, you know, bringing them to interesting platforms. There are sessions on Moonlight, on Hibernate, on cross-platform GUI development. So it's going to be some fun 4 days in Austin. And, you know, the famous Larry Ewing lives there, and a bunch of Mono engineers are going to be there. So, you know, I'm pretty excited.
Rodrigo's coming to give a talk on Mono SIMD too, which should be really good.
Yeah, and we're also, I think we're giving a discount for Monotouch to attendees as well, so, you know, so they'll be pretty excited.
I see from online that is 150 off Monotouch for Monospace attendees?
Yep.
I think so.
Yep, 150 off.
Okay, and then the SIMD thing that you mentioned, that's the SIMD optimization for, I remember something about vectors and some really cool thing, that also from the PDC talk.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So he'll go into the details, because what is, you know, we tried to get that standardized this year in ECMA, but the situation is basically that we need to try this stuff out in more processors, because, you know, once it's in the standard, you kind of mandate what everybody needs to have. And we don't really know where SIMD is going to go. You know, in general, the SIMD technology go on different processors. So we're kind of taking a step back and wondering, how does this map to PowerPC? How does this map to, you know, to LaraBee? Do we need to support more registers, less registers? You know, how does this work with SIMD on embedded devices and, you know, other vendors things? So, you know, it's an interesting, highly volatile topic, because we want to do the right thing with SIMD. So I'll hopefully have an interesting discussion with Rodrigo, which, We'll also discuss how do you actually map hardware primitives to .NET. So how do you, you know, now that we have a virtual machine that we can actually milk, right? We have an open source VM that we can milk until, you know, the end of the days. Why don't we take advantage of hardware, you know, acceleration features directly at the, you know, at the .NET level? So I think that that is the area that is going to be the most interesting. So anyway, so I think that's it, guys.
Did we lose John?
I was muted. I was muted. I just did the most beautiful. It was an outro for the show, and I actually sang it. But now I'm a little winded.
Take two.
No, I can't. I can't sing it again. So I'll just say it. But thank you guys so much for your time and for explaining this. It's excellent stuff.
Yeah, thank you guys.
It sounded better when I sang it. But
I think that you should sing it.
I think take two is in order.
Well, you know, actually, I'll just run it through the auto-tune plugin, and
there we go.
Can we auto-tune the whole show?
I tried it. It doesn't work very well.
No, it doesn't. I think
we need to have keyboards.
There's skill involved.
I was very upset when IMT Pain came out for the iPhone, and it wasn't made in Monotouch.
Yes.
Yes. Sad.
That was my.
Yeah,
that was
actually, my, actually, you know, John, that's another reason that you need to get an iPhone. I mean, I don't want to keep pointing out the fact that Windows Mobile has no apps, but on the iPod, you have IMT Pain.
You can auto-tune yourself everywhere.
Right, just constantly, like calling in an order at Domino's, and just why not auto-tune that?
That is my new modus operandi.
I was sold when I saw the lightsaber in the beer app. It just puts a beer on there, and it goes away as you tip it back.
I think you could actually even write that on Windows Mobile. I'll have to see.
Yeah, but it'd be really slow and choppy.
Right. But somebody has to have an actual Windows Mobile device to be able to write.
That's true. All right. Well, excellent. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much, guys.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye.